Welcome to the latest installment of the High Pressure Podcast. My name is Jeff Beamish, air quality meteorologist with Sonoma Technology in the San Francisco Bay Area.
And I am Patrick Zahn, the lead air quality forecaster for Sonoma Technology.
And I am Steve Irwin, an air quality forecaster with Sonoma Technology.
The United States EPA has designated May 3rd through 7th, 2021, Air Quality Awareness Week across the country. One of the daily topics during Air Quality Awareness Week, wildfires and smoke. And with that in mind, we have put together a three-part podcast series on smoke forecasting. In part one here, we'll discuss our own personal experiences when forecasting smoke. Part two, we'll discuss why smoke forecasting is so hard and the tools that we use in our operational forecasting here at Sonoma Technology. And then in the final part of this podcast series, we'll take a look at the potential wildfire impacts in summer 2021 relative to the Western United States. First and foremost, you know, I guess we'll start with this, just our experiences overall with smoke forecasting. And Patrick, you know, you are a lead forecaster here at Sonoma Tech. I open the floor to you because I think out of the three of us here, you have some innate knowledge when it comes to forecasting smoke and wildfires here on the West Coast.
Yeah, I don't know if it's innate, but it's definitely learned through several seasons of really bad wildfires. And my first real experience with wildfire smoke when it comes to air quality forecasting was back in 2008. And that year we had a June thunderstorm that rolled through Northern California. It sparked a number of large fire complexes in these what we call high fuel areas, heavily wooded wildland areas. And those fires lasted for weeks or even months and produced enormous amounts of smoke throughout the whole state really, but focused on Northern California. And we forecast for the Sacramento region. So we definitely had to be on top of those smoke impacts. But what struck me was that was really just my second year of air quality forecasting. And I was just sort of settling into learning how to forecast and getting used to what I would call my rules of thumb that sort of related weather conditions to air quality in various regions across the country. And now, all of a sudden, I was thrown this curveball of wildfire smoke that was leading to the highest AQI levels I had ever seen, either for PM 2.5 or ozone. And I had to adjust really quickly and learn from other forecasters here at Sonoma Tech that had some more experience, but just also learning to watch the situation day to day, hour to hour, and trying to make that quick adjustment to figure out what was going to happen with that smoke and how it was going to impact the air quality for our clients. But I'd like to hear what you guys have experienced with smoke in your forecasting days.
Patrick, just to go back to, you know, you said you've been forecasting smoke since 2008. Have you seen an increase in this wildfire activity over your years at Sonoma Technology? Is it something that is just happening occasionally, or are we seeing an increase?
Anecdotally, I would say definitely an increase. And what we've seen for the last 4 years now, at least in Sonoma County, where the Sonoma Tech offices are, we've seen major wildfire events with smoke impacting Sonoma County and forcing evacuation. So that's been every year for the last 4 years. But on top of that, we've seen large wildfires across the West Coast, up into Canada, and it wider spread across the country and with impacts across the entire country. So not just local transport from a fire that's 20, 50, 100 miles away, but long range transport, hundreds or even thousands of miles. I've definitely noticed an increase.
Yeah, and with my background in smoke forecasting, my first experience with it really was back in 2015. I was working as an air quality forecaster up in Minnesota. And what you're talking about is exactly what kind of brought air quality forecasting to the forefront across the state of Minnesota back in 2015. Similar conditions were present that year where there were numerous large wildfires across the Intermountain West up into British Columbia and eastward to Saskatchewan. Generally, in Minnesota, in the past, air quality had been an issue mainly in metropolitan areas, just like in other places in the country, in Los Angeles, in New York City, Chicago, those places that you think of that have issues with air quality due to traffic and the number of large facilities. But what we had seen in recent years was sort of a transition as emissions are getting less in metropolitan areas due to regulations and changes in fuels. Smoke has really come to the forefront as one of the big air quality issues across the country. So in Minnesota that year in 2015, there was a cold front that was moving in from Canada, and there was smoke behind that cold front. And as we know, as meteorologists, behind a cold front, you have a lot of sinking air, and that helped to bring the smoke that was traveling hundreds, if not thousands of miles from northwestern Canada into the Twin Cities area. And it was so thick that it impacted air traffic. They had to decrease the amount of planes that were able to come in due to the visibility restrictions. People could smell the smoke in the air, and those were some of the highest air quality index readings in over a decade in Minnesota when that smoke came in 2015. And so all of a sudden, smoke was not just an issue, you know, in downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul. Air quality was an issue across the rural parts, all the way into the Arrowhead of Minnesota, because of this huge mass of smoke that had traveled hundreds, if not, you know, 1,000 miles to get into the Twin Cities. And so actually, that's why we ended up developing a bigger forecasting program in Minnesota to serve those places outstate that didn't have as much air quality information, because they wanted to know, when is this smoke going to come? Is it going to happen again? What are the health impacts going to be?
I think it's interesting, not only hearing that, but, you know, thinking about my experience, my first experience with smoke forecasting here in the San Francisco Bay Area with the Kincade Fire that developed in October of 2019, when a series of upper-level troughs passing off to the east of California developed a very strong offshore wind pattern, active fires ongoing already. It did force a large, if not one of the largest mass evacuation in Sonoma County history with the Kincade Fire, basically from Santa Rosa all the way out to the coast. And kind of like Patrick, you know, I was relatively, you know, new when it came to smoke forecasting. So trying to see which wind pattern was going to develop, how it might impact some of our forecast clients in Northern California. You know, that was kind of baptism by fire, no pun intended. But also, I think the other thing, and Patrick, you know, I think you can, with your experience, I think you'd agree with this. I think the awareness for smoke impacts in communities, at least in the last, as you mentioned, 3-4 years, I think that has exponentially grown to the point that, you know, smoke forecasting is really front and center, especially in the summer and the fall out west.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's on people's minds. Worth mentioning not just the smoke impacts, but obviously the fire danger. But I think we should also mention people are thinking more about the localized air quality impacts because of increased air quality monitoring, not just the regulatory monitors, but with the growth of low-cost sensors, which are much more widespread. They might not have the same accuracy, but they're bringing a lot of very localized data to people, and they can pick up the smoke within minutes, basically. It can detect those increased PM concentrations, for instance. And so people are seeing that information, and they are much more aware of the smoke impacts on their health and the air quality.
I think that's sort of a blessing and a curse, isn't it, though? You know, the fact that we do have, you know, low-cost air quality sensors that give us that information within minutes, but also the lack of regulatory air quality monitoring sites really adds a degree of difficulty when trying to forecast smoke in certain situations, whether it's, you know, a fire that's, you know, a couple hundred miles away, or a fire that is burning thousands of miles away, like Steve's experience with some of the wildfires in 2015 up in Canada.
Yeah, Jeff, especially with long-range transport, the lack of regulatory air quality monitors for fine particles was one of the biggest challenges we faced there, because there wasn't much between a fire in, say, Saskatchewan and some of our monitors in northwestern Minnesota. And so there wasn't a lot of information to know if that smoke had reached the ground. So a lot of times we had to rely on observations of visibility from the scattered weather stations that were upstream from us. Some of the air agencies in the West have produced some pretty nice guidance on how air quality index levels relate to visibility. And so we could use that to look upstream and try and get an estimate of how bad the air quality could be in the coming days. It's also an issue in places like Louisiana, as we saw this week with smoke traveling all the way from the Yucatan Peninsula up into Louisiana, over 600 miles. Obviously in the center of the Gulf, we don't have air quality observations. So it takes a lot of knowledge about the atmosphere and how it works and to determine whether that smoke is going to make it to the surface or just produce a nice sunset.
Yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning that some air quality agencies do make an effort to deploy mobile monitors into areas with high concentrations of smoke as these fires are developing. For instance, the Air Resources Board in California does that routinely during wildfires. I think, yeah, this is a good opportunity, a good segue to start talking about what makes it difficult to forecast air quality when wildfires are part of the equation. We mentioned transport. We also mentioned the lack of monitors. Jeff, you had something you wanted to add.
Yeah, and just to paint a very broad brush here, the lack of monitoring sites isn't just exclusive for air quality, right? Because as Steve pointed out, you know, not only up in Canada, but in the Gulf of Mexico, not only, you know, is there a lack of air quality monitoring sites, there's a lack of weather information in general. So it's not just exclusive to air quality monitoring sites that there aren't enough regulatory ones, but also from a forecasting perspective, trying to take a look at temperature and wind and relative humidity for certain locations, that information isn't there as well. And that certainly makes things tough when forecasting smoke impacts for a city. Well, we certainly appreciate everybody listening to part one of our smoke forecasting podcast. Join us next week for part two as we discuss the challenges in forecasting smoke, along with some of the tools that we use to forecast smoke in our day-to-day operations here at Sonoma Tech. To see all the amazing work we're doing here at Sonoma Technology, head to www.sonomatech.com. As always, you can follow the High Pressure Podcast on Twitter. We're at High Pressure Pod. I'm Jeff Beamish.
I'm Patrick Zahn.
And I'm Steve Irwin.
Thanks for listening to the High Pressure Podcast.